Were you raised in Iran? Do you speak Farsi?
I was born in Iran, but my parents separated when I was about 2.5 years old, and I grew up in San Francisco with my mother. When I was a young teenager, about the age of 13, I started to go to Iran and visit my father's side of the family. And it was a really interesting experience for me because in San Francisco, I just had a very small family, about just 3 people. When I went to Tehran, I had cousins and aunts and uncles and extended family, so that every party was basically almost like a town hall meeting. It was huge. As far as the issue of speaking Farsi, I took a year off between high school and college in order to go there and spend the year with my father's side of the family and study the language. I was 16 then, but it proved to be a very fateful year because that was the year that the revolution was happening. It was 1979. So the revolution ended up interrupting my studies. At a certain point towards the end of 1979, my father decided that he wanted to take the family out of the country because he felt it would be the safest thing to do. So at that point, we left and my studies were put aside.
Is this book based on a true story?
No, it's actually not based on a true story at all. It's wholly invented with one small parenthesis to that. When I was conceiving of the book, I started to think a little bit about my grandmother and about my aunt. My grandmother got married when she was 14, and her daughter also was married at the age of 14. And this was traditional at the time. And when I was thinking about my heroine, I was wondering what would happen to a young woman who thought that this would be her future and who anticipated it, but then for one reason or another, found out that that would not be the case. And who found that her life was derailed and that she'd have to go in a different direction. So that's the part that is somewhat based on the experiences of my family and on typical experiences of women of the period. However, the setting actually is quite factual. The book is set in 17th century Iran during a very exciting period. The book is set during the reign of Shah Abbas, who is still referred to as Shah Abbas the Great because of his accomplishments and achievements. He was probably the greatest Iranian monarch, perhaps ever. He was known for putting on disguises and going among his people to find out what was really going on, to make sure that, say, the bakers and the butchers were actually giving people their fair share of meat and bread according to how much they weighed and how much people paid. He also really did incredible things for the country. He faced enormous problems when he took power when he was only 17. He had to fight off the Ottomans and other groups that were trying to claim territory, and he also had to deal with a lot of internal political dissent in the country. But because he was such a shrewd statesman, he ended up succeeding in both of these things. And the important point about this is not only did it stabilize the country, but it really allowed for a time of prosperity. And this meant that things like the arts could really flourish. He did things like set up enormous carpet factories, and he engaged in trade with the West. So silk became the number one export of the country, and this trade was handled by Armenian Iranians, Christians, obviously, who handled it for him. And it was also actually a time of surprising religious tolerance. He did allow Christian missionaries in the country, and they have left very interesting accounts of their time there. And he also, as I said earlier, started these carpet factories that produced some of the finest carpets ever made. And it's interesting, actually, European kings and noblemen of the period got very excited about these products. And we know that, for instance, the King of Poland commissioned a carpet with his coat of arms, which still exists in a museum today. So it was quite an amazing period in terms of artistic achievement.
What do you hope this book brings to your listeners?
You know, for the past 30 years, the United States and Iran have not had diplomatic relations. But before that period, there was a lot of exchange between the two countries. I think there was something like 40,000 Americans working in Iran in the 70s. And naturally, there was a lot of exchange then between these two open countries, meaning there was a lot of students back and forth, a lot of travel, people married each other, and so on. So people from the two countries got to know each other. This is really not true very much today. Iran has become something of a mystery to people, especially in the West. What we do get, though, are lots of headlines about the political events between the two countries, Iran and the U.S., and it seems not much else. So what I hope with my book is that people will get a broader view of the culture, something that goes beyond just the ordinary headlines we hear about, something that introduces people to Iran and Iranians as ordinary human beings with hopes and dreams and desires.
What do you think about women's status in Iran today?
I think it's really wonderful that as of summer of 2006, women in Iran have organized what they call the Million Signatures Campaign. And what they're trying to do is collect a million signatures in order to present this to the government and put an end to laws that discriminate against women. This is a campaign that, again, I don't think is very well known here, and it is an important thing that the women of the country are doing. But that said, the women have always been involved in social movements in the 20th century. They were involved in the Constitutional Revolution in the early 1900s, which was a fight to get a constitutional system going. And they were, of course, very involved in the fight to overthrow the monarchy in 1979. So this is just part of a long tradition.
Are the fables all based on folklore?
In the book, I intersperse seven tales. After every chapter, there's a tale. Five of them come from traditional sources. The first one and the last one I had to write myself because I needed to have tales that worked with the narrative arc of the novel. But the other five come from a variety of sources, including collections of traditional tales and work by 12th and 13th century Iranian poets who often used traditional tales in their poetry, which they retold in a way that fit whatever their message was. A key reason for my using these tales is I think they're very beautiful and very meaningful. But also, I've noticed that here we tend to very much know the tales of, say, the Brothers Grimm, of Aesop's fables, we know the Greek and Roman myths, and we know parts of the Arabian Nights. However, this great heritage of Iranian literature is much less known here, and so it seemed to me a really good opportunity to share it.
Did the editing process remove a lot of your writing, or is it fairly intact? Did you have any disagreement with your editor that you're comfortable talking about?
I received edits from both the American editor and British editor of my book at the same time, and I'm lucky because I was working with two very seasoned editors, very sensitive, with excellent suggestions. And I think every writer loves an editor who has good suggestions that actually add to the quality of your book. So these suggestions were actually primarily fine-tuning kinds of suggestions. There were no major changes in the plot or the characters or anything like that. And as a result, they were very welcome.
What do you think happened to this woman, your protagonist?
Well, without answering directly what her fate is, the book is deeply inspired by tales and the art of tale-telling. So you'll notice that in the beginning, the mother tells the daughter a story. And the story has some autobiographical details about the daughter, which of course is the storyteller's prerogative. But it's also a story that lays out what the mother expects for the daughter, which is a good marriage and lots of children. Then at the end of the book, the daughter tells her own story. And this stems from the whole idea that I think all of us tend to inherit a script, whether it's from our parents, our friends, our neighbors or teachers, or just something inside ourselves that tells us what we think we ought to be doing. And then as time goes by, we grow up and mature, we find that often that script doesn't fit us perfectly and that we have to adapt it, adjust it, or even throw it out altogether. So as far as the ending is concerned, there are lots of clues in the final tale.
Do you have children? Have you read the story to them?
I don't have children myself. I have given the novel to friends of mine who have 12 and 13-year-old girls, and I asked them to read the book, the adults to read the book, and let me know if they thought it would be appropriate then to please pass it on. And I'm happy to say that one of my friends did pass it on to her 13-year-old daughter, and her response to me after reading the book was that the discussion about the use of colors in carpet making had really inspired her, and that she had based the colors that she chose for a necklace that she was making for a school auction on what she had read in the book, and that made me really happy.
What is your next book? And will there be a sequel to The Blood of Flowers?
You know, I'm not planning a sequel because the story is complete in my mind, but I am certainly planning to write more novels and to continue to focus on Iranian history and Iranian women, both of which I think are really untapped subjects in fiction and in the West.
How did this story arise? Did it just come to you? Or did you craft it deliberately to portray the women's situation as well as the time and place?
I worked out the plot very slowly over a period of about 5 or 6 years. I really had no idea where it would go at first. Part of the reason for that is that the research I was doing into Iranian history and literature slowly began to shape the story. As far as the question of women's situation is concerned, I really did want to give insight into women's lives of the period. And one major reason for that is that starting in the 17th century, there began to be a lot of travelers' accounts by Westerners who had traveled to Iran, usually for business. But these accounts were usually written by men, and men didn't necessarily have a lot of access to Iranian women and what their lives were actually like. And I think that has continued, that general lack of understanding of how women lived and what their concerns were. And so I really wanted to portray, as well as I could, give a picture of women's lives and to show them in the spheres where they would have had the most influence at the time in the 17th century, in their homes, in crafts like rug making, behind the scenes, but with a lot of power, as was also true of most European women. This also explains why I decided to use a first-person voice in the novel, in other words, an I voice, because I wanted to let readers feel that they were having a direct connection into the heart and mind of a person, and to make this person not sort of an abstraction, but a real, living, breathing individual, as realistic as possible.
What's your protagonist's name?
Well, I've gathered you've noticed that the heroine is unnamed throughout the book. The reason for this is that while I was writing the novel, there was one day where I was looking around my living room and I noticed the Persian carpet on the floor, some miniatures on the wall, and some embroidery that I had bought in Iran. And I thought to myself about how I love these works and they're made by craftsmen and women, and obviously they're not signed. And I began to think about what the life of a craftsperson must have been like. And that was really the impetus for thinking about my heroine and what her life might have been like. Even today, rugs, handmade rugs, are rarely signed. There are some of the finest rugs that were made in the 17th century are signed through calligraphy that's actually knotted into the rug. But this is very, very rare. And so most of the pieces that you'll see, most of the pieces that people have, we have no idea who made them. And it seemed to me really important to mark this in some way by not naming my heroine. In other words, by pointing out that all this beautiful work that we treasure is made by people whose names we don't know and never will.
Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.